Hello, my name's Tamsin Westall and welcome to Fresh from the Pod. I'm absolutely thrilled to announce that this is my 30th episode and I'm so grateful to all of you for listening regularly and to my incredible guests who just offer such wonderful inspiration to us all. Now, I thought it would be fun in the 30th episode to have a guest that would tickle your taste buds. So join me as I talk to food and garden writer Mark Diacono. Mark, how lovely to see you.
It's really, really, really fab to see you too. Yeah, what a thing. We usually kind of end up in the same place a few times a year, don't we? But of course, you know, quite a bit of that's been curtailed this year. But
I know.
Very nice to see you virtually.
Yeah, it's lovely. Now, it's quite early in the morning for me. I have to say, I'm not a morning person, but I've already been outside in my slippers to pick. Look at this wonderful quince.
Oh my God, look at this. That is the most extraordinary quince. It's big. There's no blemishes on it. That's like a cartoon quince. That's the perfect quince.
Exactly. I've got to show this off. My husband said, "What the hell are you doing walking down the garden in your slippers?" So I've now got wet feet marks in my study. But I just had to show off. This is showing off my gardening prowess. But the funny thing is, this quince was given to me by the girls at the English Garden magazine because we featured you regularly. And I think you did something on quince years ago and they remembered and bought me this wonderful tree.
Well, look, there's a nice circle, isn't it?
It is a nice circle, actually. So we met, it must be over 10 years ago, mustn't it now?
I think it probably is. Yeah, it must be a dozen. Where's that gone?
I don't know. But you were a mere child, a boy.
I was still in short trousers and doing a paper round or something, I wish.
But it was so exciting. I remember one of the team saying, "There's a climate change gardener. We've got to have him in the magazine." And I mean, do you still get called the climate change gardener?
Not so much. I think early on, you know, because I was planting a lot of unusual things, you know, pecans and olives and you know, almonds and those kind of things that we've always thought of as being either beyond or right on the risky end of anything we might grow here. You know, that's I planted a lot of that early on because it takes ages to obviously, you know, come to productivity, you know, but I was, most of the rest of the stuff catches up pretty quick. So I was writing about everything really, you know, the joy of gardening, the pleasure in turning what you've grown into something delicious and the whole process of, you know, the whole plot to plate thing. So less so, I think, because, you know, I wanted to grow a lot of things here and try stuff out. You know, I had a bit of space and that was where the pleasure was for me. You know, and don't forget, you know, that at the very beginning, I wasn't doing anything with an intention other than seeing if it would work. I wasn't writing, you know, I was writing a blog. I started a blog in 2002, I think, but it was entirely for me so that I didn't forget what I'd done because, you know, we can twist and misforget and misremember and you know, all of that stuff. So I thought, just put it down. I want to take some pictures. I wanted to keep, you know, an idea of what had been going on. So I think probably not, but because I grow quite a lot, you know, my first rule is, you know, if you love it and you can't buy it in the shops, then grow it. Then I tend to prioritize things that are quite difficult to get in the shop. So maybe I'm known for growing unusual things, I would say, more so now.
You'll laugh. Last night, I thought, I want to talk to Mark about the trees I've grown that I also got the idea from him. And I couldn't remember the name. So I sat on Google and I thought, I know, they're called chuckberries. So I put in chuckberry. And I thought, oh, no, that's a musician. And actually, what I mean is, I thought, what an idiot. Chokeberries, the aronia.
Chokeberries. Yeah, they're a beautiful tree as well, aren't they? I mean, they're just, you know. This is the terrible thing, C. Thames. I think I started growing stuff just for the produce, and slowly, slowly, all you other lot who grow ornamental stuff too, they gradually chip away at you, you know, subconsciously, until you start thinking, "Oh, that's a gorgeous tree. I think I'll have some of that. You know, I think I'll plant that one just there. I think I'll have a little bit of a mind towards the aesthetic." And slowly, slowly, I cross at least partly over into the dark side.
Yeah, well, I've got 14 of them, Chuck 14? Berries.
I'm impressed.
14 Chuck Berries in my garden, and I can't remember. And
I've never
picked a fruit from them. They're just, to me, they're just the birds, and they look beautiful. So, yes. Yeah. Now, this is the interesting thing, isn't it? It's like, what are you? Who are you, Mark? Because you could be a foodie, a gardener, an author. So if someone said in one word, describe yourself, what would you say?
Goof.
It's tough, isn't it?
It is tough. Yeah, because I think if I had to be pushed, I'd probably say writer, because it sort of pulls all the things together, if you see what I mean. You know, I think if there's, you know, I don't just cook. I grow stuff, and I don't just grow stuff. I want to cook it. So it feels to me like it's all part of the same thing. You know, one's left hand, one's right hand, you know. But I do, the writing has become something that I really love, you know. And I do, you know, I do write plot to plate books. I do write gardening books. I write mostly food books now, I guess. You know, and I take the pictures for them because I'm there, you know, and because it gives me pleasure and because I taught myself how to do it. And, you know, you get better at all of that stuff. And I think, I suspect everybody who does whatever it is that they do, certainly in the kind of creative area that we're in, you know, of gardening and cooking and writing and photography and all of that sort of thing. They're probably all of those things, but people think of them as one, you know?
Yeah. No, I was thinking this morning, I wonder what he is.
Yeah. Well, I tend to write about everything. Yeah. No, well, that's very nice. I think also if you're, you know, one thing that's worth doing is if don't be, take new stuff on all the time, play with it. You know, that's what I've tried to do. You know, I've had a lot of uninteresting jobs in my life. And when I started blogging and then had the chance to kind of write, I thought one thing to do, Diacono, is not turn it into a job. You know, don't turn it into a job. Keep doing exciting and interesting things and allow yourself to be crap at stuff. I think that's the thing is don't just stick at stuff you're good at. Keep trying different things. You know, I was fairly crap at photography early on. You know, you can't not be, can you? You know, it's quite a skill. That's why people are photographers, because it's actually not that simple. You know, we can all take a perfectly nice picture with a phone, but if you want to get better at it, you've got to be a bit crap about it and get through that and develop some kind of style and eye. And I think, yeah, I think having proven myself to be relatively unemployable, I just thought, do a lot of things. And if you're all right at some of them, then maybe you could piece together an income and
something
kind of interesting
will
life.
Happen. Now, I want to know how you got from doing a degree in environmental planning. Is that right?
Yeah.
Gosh, that sounds very heavy, you know. How did you get from there to being at River Cottage? Mm. I mean, that seems quite extreme, really, to me.
Yeah. Do you know what? That old nonsense about, you know, making a plan and then life happens is pretty much how it goes, you know. I'm not a great planner. So I went to university very late, and mostly because I was deeply idle and life was really about music and what was happening this weekend. And then I thought I'd better give myself a chance of doing something slightly different. Otherwise, I'd be doing this until I was 74 to no great effect. So I went to university. I did okay. I went and did a master's. And by complete fluke, the guy who was externally examining the kind of dissertation you have to do, he ran a consultancy and offered me a job, and they happened to be the consultancy I wanted to work for. So I started doing what I'd been doing in the degree, in the master's, which was, I guess, you know, advising local authorities and government agencies about managing the landscape, but kind of on a national level. So it was really, really nice. You know, it tied in to try to guide all the payment system and stuff for farmers towards maintaining and reinstating in places the bits of landscape that were characteristic to them, you know, whether it's small fields of a regular edge, you know, in a kind of piecemeal thing, or whether it was, you know, the flatlands of the fens or whatever else it was, plus being innovative. So I really, you know, it's really kind of interesting, nice work. And I met my wife when I was doing it, and we started growing things, and well, she was a gardener, you know, and I got the bug from her, really.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. It was totally that. I was never into any of this until, you know, or likely, let's put it that way. And then when we got together, you know, 20 years
ago. Well, you know what they say, behind every great man is an even greater woman.
Well, I'd say she was in front of me, and that I'm just taller.
that's
about it, I think. You know, I you know, she was in the garden, I'm thinking I've got to do something to be out there with her, and I grew some spuds, and you know, and I kind of got a bug, and we decided to move I'll tell you what it was. We were watching the first series of River Cottage, you know, a little bit tiddly on a Friday night or whenever it was on. You know, you'd have a glass of wine or two. And we'd been thinking it would be nice to get somewhere more rural and all of that sort of stuff. Before then, anyway, and I'm from Devon and all of that. So we decided we'd shift back to, you know, for me back to Devon and to her for Devon.
So were you in Oxford before or London or?
I'd been in Winchester and then London.
Ah, okay.
And at that point in Whitstable, so in Kent, I was out on the Kent coast, which I really loved. I wrote to Hugh, like in the days when people used to write to people.
How charming. And you sent it on a carriage with a horse.
I sent it on a pigeon, on my best steed, slapped its backside and sent it off. And it was addressed to Hugh Fernley Whittingstall, River Cottage, Netherbury or something like that. You know, the nearest town that was obvious from the programme, Dorset. And it got to him. And I'd had this idea for a book that was like, eat the view. You know, you write the bit about the food, I'll write the bit about the landscape. So it was all this thing about, you know, re-encouraging landscapes to be about what we eat, which they kind of are, but they're also becoming a bit of sort of wildlife deserts at the time. And, you know, it was a really nice thing, this called Eat the View book. And he rang up and he said, this sounds a brilliant idea, but I'm writing the first River Cottage book. But why don't we go fishing? So we did, went out fishing, had a nice time.
Lovely.
And I was, at that point, I was doing a bit more kind of web work. So I started working on the River Cottage website with the kind of main people who were doing that. And a year or two passed, and by then we'd moved to what became Otter Farm, you know. So I had a bit of land that I was planting things on. I mean, it was just literally a couple of fields behind an end of terraced house.
I visited you. It was like a sort of TARDIS, because I came in through your little house, and then, my goodness, there's a vineyard. Yeah, strange.
Yeah, it was exactly like that. It was like sort of Mr. Ben, wasn't it? Or a bit Narnia-ish or something like that. You know, you kind of go whoosh at the back. And and they were, I don't know, they I think I mentioned to somebody that, you know, I was just planting some apricots, and he was like, okay, we'll have a bet and see if you. So they filmed a bit, and then somebody left River Cottage. Can you run a course? I can run a course. Can you, do you want to be the head? No, I don't want to be the head gardener. I'm doing my own thing, but I can kind of help lead the team, if you know what I mean, set the scene, you know, that kind of thing. So I did a bit of that, and, you know, then I wrote a few books, and you see how it goes. You know, it's one of those, you know, you sneeze 1 year and you catch a cold 3 years later from it. You know, it's one of those kind of odd things that just happened, and it was really, really good fun, you know.
But that's just wonderful, actually. Really organic, appropriate to you, organic way of finding work, isn't it? Brilliant.
I would say for the first two or three books, I was still doing all of my kind of landscape, environmental consultancy kind of work, you know, because I didn't know if that was it. You know, I didn't know if that was it. And you still don't. I mean, if you know what it's like. If you're a writer, come whatever else it is you do, it's not a job for life. You know, you've got to keep being interesting and keep coming up with good stuff and hope that people like what you do, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I was going to say to you, I mean, it is, people think, oh, an author, how charming, you sit with your dog by your side and you, you know, drink lovely teas and you tap away. But actually, I mean, I'm doing a book at the minute and it's quite stressful. I find it quite stressful. The book I've just written, which was very much about myself, I didn't find at all stressful. But what I wanted to know from you is, do you feel like I did, sick as a dog before it goes to print and worried that people will give you a bad review or not buy it? How do you feel about that?
Yeah. Yeah, it's really tricky. It's really tricky because, like you say, it has, I mean, you know, it's not coal mining, for God's sake, but like you say, you know, if you put in something of yourself in it and, you know, as in not just you as the subject, but if you're, you know, getting quite into it and being very personal about it, even if it's about quince, you know, there's a lot of you invested in it and it means a lot. And, you know, it's around and out there, you know, it's not a passing thing. And I have the same as many, I suspect, where you think, oh, this is a great idea. Oh, this is terrible. Oh, it's brilliant. Oh, look, I've made a... And it goes like that. And then, as you say, you get to the punchline and you've got to send it out. And immediately you send it out. If it's the food book for me, I'm thinking, God, there's about six recipes there I could have got in. They're really brilliant. That would have changed the whole book. What a twit I am, you know. Yeah. And it's never that a book's finished, I think, or not for me. It always feels like it's dragged out of my claws, and I'll do anything to get it back and improve it. And yeah, that's how it is. But I love it. You know, I love the process of it. I love the torture of it, like a twit. You know, and I love doing it.
I can see you're in a loft space, aren't you? Converted loft space.
And
I feel like you've shut yourself up there. This is where I will work. I will get this done. Yes.
Yeah, it feels like I'm one of those mad professors in an old horror film where, you know, I'm doing my research, and you slam the door, and then you leave tea outside, and that's all you hear, a door being open and shut, and I've got this 8-foot beard upstairs. It feels a bit like that at times.
Brilliant. So when it comes to creating a cookery book, you've got to come up with unique recipes, I take it. Or, I mean, how do you do that? Is your kitchen like one big experimental nightmare? I mean, do your family have to eat peculiar oddities?
they do. But, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because there's, you know, the very great majority of recipes are just your version of something that people know. And it may be that version of it is absolutely blindingly delightful, because, you know, your crumble, my crumble, my wife's crumble, you know, everybody's crumble is different. So it doesn't, I don't think you need to be striving for, I don't know, you know, carrot, pecan, raspberry and lovage pie. You know, you don't have to do that, but you do. I think it's the combinations of things often. And I think that's really crucial, I think, to be bright and interesting, to be about it. But I think also, you know, we mustn't forget that a great deal of things with a cookery book now, you know, with a food book now, is people read them like books. You know, they're not just something that you put off the shelf. People read them like books. So, you know, all the stuff that people just used to knock out is, to me, the most pleasurable. You know, all the intros to recipes.
That to me is just gold. I absolutely love it. And it's the
bits that why they've made this
Yeah, it could be. It could be that this, you know, I do it like this because of
something that happened when I was seven, or when I was chased through the streets of Istanbul by people I'd never met, or, you know, it could be anything. But I love that. You know, I love the fact that for me anyway, I've got two kinds of food book. One is the Jane Grigson stuff, you know, that I'm just going, do you know what? I'm back to that all day long. They're just gold. You know, the vegetable book and the fruit book are Bibles. You know, they're absolutely like that. And then I have other books which I may use as much, but they just make me happy for the reading, you know, and that's really crucial. And I try and write both. And, you know, that's what I hope to do, really. But yeah, as you know, I waffle like crazy. To do the Ronnie Corbett and get back to your actual question, yes, there are things where, you know, my wife and daughter are like, are you sure that you want me to eat this celeriac creme brulee? And I'm like, honestly, I promise you, it's really nice. It's really, really nice. I promise you. And they know that if something's crap, what I would have done is I would have tasted it and gone, do you know what? I'd like you to taste it in case you can tell me it's great. But I know it's a bit rubbish, so I've done another pud as well. Do you know what I mean? And it nearly always is puds, you know, where you've just gone, celeriac.
Is your daughter, has she got like a sort of a good palate? So is she sort of into chicken nuggets and chips? Would she rather have that? Have you put her off?
She'll eat everything.
Oh, that's good.
No, she'll have everything. She will, she's 14. She will very happily sit on the beach wall and eat chips all day with ketchup and be perfectly happy. But she also loves all the other stuff, which is great. You know, yes, she's got things she doesn't like, and that's totally fine. And we've kind of made a rule where, so that I'm not just cooking the same thing all the bleeding time, is that we all have to eat a little bit of stuff that we don't particularly love.
Yeah.
And I think if it's even, then people tend to kind of get it. So I have to eat a few bits I'm less keen on, and so does everyone. But she's great. She's great. And I think a lot of it is that thing of, we were always growing stuff. She was always outside picking things, having stuff raw. And then that makes you inquisitive about what they're like when they're cooked, you know?
My son is 14, same age as your daughter, and he's really started cooking. I mean, really doing curry sauces, everything. I'm not allowed to cook. I haven't cooked for 4 weeks. It's brilliant. But last night he did an experimental flapjack.
And I had to pull a face that went, it's lovely. It was awful. He'd made the recipe up. It was bananas, raisins, oats, and ground almonds. No sugar in it whatsoever.
Yosh.
Yeah.
I'm chewing wallpaper at the moment in my mind. You know what I mean? It's like, ah. But hey, if he's cooking and you haven't had to for 4 weeks, that's
marvelous. I'm loving it.
That's a pretty good dude. You brought him up well.
Well, we'll see. Time will tell. Now, going back to Otter Farm, obviously you were growing vines and Szechuan pepper and amazing things. And you're not there anymore. You're focusing on your writing. Do you miss that plot of land? I mean, or do you think, right, okay, it was a moment in time that I loved and I'm on to the next thing. What's your... Because it's gone... new people are there and they're working it.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel both, I think. I feel both. I think that it was enormous pleasure and fun, you know, and our daughter was born and grew up there. It would literally was two empty fields and there's tens of thousands of plants. And probably, I certainly can't think of anything that it's possible to grow in the UK and a few things that it's not possible to grow in the UK that haven't been planted there and eaten from there. And most of them are growing there still, you know. And so it's a very special place, you know, and I love it. And so, yeah, I think I miss a lot of it. The thing that I always felt alongside that was that it was very hard to have 17 acres with tens of thousands of plants and to do it proper justice when actually... it was not done at the time as a business. You know, it was literally done for, I fancy walnuts. Oh, I love mulberries, you know. Quince, we need some quince. Medlars, you know, it was like that. Oh, I wonder if Szechuan peppers would work here. Are there some almonds that might work in Devon? So it was not done with anything at all in mind, apart from let's grow stuff. So it wasn't that it was a kind of money generator, you know. It was all, it just took, you know, 17 acres. I mean, you know, imagine looking after an allotment, or imagine 17 acres worth of that, you know. It was, yeah. You know, and I think I made up for my idleness in my teens and 20s by having really kind of energetic later time there. So yes, I miss all of that, but you know, life changes and you know, I'm really content. We're really content with the life we have now. It's a simpler one. You know, I'm able to write more, dedicate more time to that. I don't have, you know, we've got a small garden here that we've come to, you know, I've only been here 3 months and it's really great because there's enough time to know the, as it were, know the name of every plant, you know, its own, you know, Frank, you're the lemon verbena, you know, Bob, you know every single one of them like they're a person. And I'm really enjoying that. And I like that scale of it. And I think life is in better balance, you know, because literally I'd be, you know, it was perfectly usual to be 15, 16 hours a day and totally loving it. But, you know, there has to be other things in life as well, you know. And we went back to, we went back a few weeks ago and the people who are there now, it's now called Heron Farm and they've got a lovely website. They've done things that are quite different to what we would have. You know, they've got a really lovely garden designed by James Alexander Sinclair.
Yeah, I saw that's great. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really lovely. You know what? And they've done amazing things, you know, like I say, very differently to what we have, but they've kept the spirit of the place, I think. And that's all you can really hope for when you've had, I think, you know, a pretty magic impact on two fields that were just empty and being thrown nitrogen every year, you know, to make it somewhere different and original and inspiring to a lot of people, which is really lovely. And they've taken it on and done amazing things. And it's open. That's the great thing. It's not something that's just a private thing tucked away. People can go there. And I know they've got more plans for it, all of that stuff. So in lots of ways, it's as good as it could be, really.
Yeah, that's lovely that you feel you can go back and you're not sort of disheartened by what's happening. So all good, really. But I mean, I run my uncle's 4-acre garden and it sounds awful, but you sometimes yearn for a small plot because, like you say, it is absolutely exhausting. There's no let up. You can't let it go. And as you get older,
it's never done.
Every year, it's harder, you know, because. But do you think that people watch the telly, they watch things like River Cottage and they think, oh, I'd like a small holding of a few acres. Do you think people have an appreciation? Do you think that's put over enough on telly, how physically hard it is to do all this?
No, I don't. I don't. But it is, as you say, it's physically hard. It takes all the time you throw at it. And you have to develop a sort of non-perfection mentality, even if you're a perfectionist, because otherwise you shouldn't do it, you know. You really shouldn't. And no, of course, telly's all about the joy, and, you know, it's the two things, isn't it? It wants both ends of the spectrum and nothing in the middle. You know, it wants disaster and brilliance and, you know, triumph and disappointment and all of that. It doesn't want, this is going okay, you know. And that's fine, it's telly, that's all great, but I think, you know, time and time again, I'd have people going, you know, when we move out of our place and move to the country, we're going to X, Y, and Z. And I'm like, do you know what? Do it where you are now. You may never move. Grow stuff now. Grow it in the small area you've got. Start small and build up, because the worst thing you can do is get yourself an acre and just plant stuff, and then life will take over. It'll be complete failure and it'll put you totally off, you know?
Yeah.
We did it. We had 2 acres to start with when we first grew anything that wasn't in the tiniest of gardens. And we filled it with all kinds of veg, like absolute idiots, you know. I had the best time and it was really, really lovely. But you end up with, you know, a skip full of spuds and 2 tons of carrots. And there's nothing worse than it working and then you can't get rid of it. Even, you know, take away all of this stuff because I can't sell it. I can't use it all. I can't do all of that sort of thing, you know. So I would say start small. Make a success and then build up from there, because it will take you over otherwise and you'll feel upset.
I mean, I think that's what's been really good about this very strange period of time, is people have sort of put up with the gardens they've got, however small, or the porch or the balcony, and they are growing. And I think people have had the most incredible results, and gosh, I hope they keep doing it.
Me too. And you know what? This you say we only moved three months ago to the place we're in now, and the joy of pots by the back door, mostly herbs, you know, some veg, but mostly herbs. The joy of that, you know, the joy of that. And I always used to say, well, I had 17 acres of everything growing. If all you grow is a few herbs by the back door, you can change every meal you eat. So go big on that. You know, go for the big impact on your life and what you eat. And I've proven it to myself this year that is the way to go. The joy of it, going out and picking some lemon verbena or some Moroccan mint or whatever.
Going out picking your quince in your slippers.
Your quince, look at that quince.
I've got to show that. Thing. See, the listener's never going to see this quince. So, yeah, it's about 18 inches across.
That is a big quince, though. That is a big quince. And it looks, it's as good as any quince I've seen.
But what shall I do with it? I've got 4. What would you do with it?
Oh, you got 4. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you know what? If you've got 4, I mean, you can do a million things. You know, you can poach them, you know, in kind of a nice sugary wine with some aromatics in, you know, lemon verbena and maybe clove goes quite nicely if it's not too much with, you know, star anise a little bit. But you know what I would do if you had 4? I hate to say it. I would get myself a big jar, I'd half fill it with vodka, I'd put an inch of sugar in it, and I'd grate them into it.
Oh.
And that might 4 of them might be enough to get you, you know, to go, you know, grate 2 of them in a jar, 2 of them in another jar, inch of sugar in both, fill it up with vodka or gin, put the lid on, sit on your hands for a few months. Quince gin and quince vodka are extraordinary, and that's what I would do with it. As simple as it is, that's what I would do if I had 4.
Okay, right, I'm on it. I'm on the case. Excellent.
It's just now, the best.
You've put some amazing shots on Instagram of which I have loved looking at actually during this strange time, of the beach, the sea. Oh, how close are you? Are you very close?
About a quarter of an hour walk, something like that. So yeah, really, you know, and I've always been, you know, I was born by the sea. I feel happiest there. You know, I lived in Winchester, which was probably an hour from the sea in London, but the rest of the time I've really been, you know, within 20 minutes drive, if that, you know, and usually much, much nearer. But my other big love away from food and growing things is walking. And, you know, here is just glorious in East Devon. You know, I've got the whole coast path that I can, you know, there's the coast path, there's the beaches, there's all the inland stuff that, you know, I'm really lucky. And I would say to anyone, you know, especially at the moment, you know, where we're feeling confined and under a lot of, you know, different pressures and different things coming on, is that thing of walking, even in the city, you know, I used to do it a lot in London. I'd walked everywhere or cycled everywhere, is so liberating. It's so cheering, you know, it kind of lifts the spirits. But also I find that my brain, because it, my brain's always fixing on something. I'm a terrible reader, you know, but if I'm walking, my brain thinks, okay, you're doing something. I don't have to look for something for you to do. So things kind of settle down and shake down, and I understand things better, and I get a better picture of the world and how I feel. And it just does for me a million things that I need for something to do. But yeah, it's lovely. I love being by the beach and the sea and the coast in general, you know, and just walking with green one way and blue the other, you know, it's really lovely.
I always feel like when you're standing looking at the sea, you just feel everything else is behind you, isn't it? You're looking out to something glorious. Yeah. And all the troubles are just sort of back there somewhere.
Exactly that. You know, even as a kid, it used to blow me away that even when I was asleep, the sea kept doing its thing. I couldn't quite understand it. It was like it didn't take a breath. It didn't need to rest like I did. You know, it was always doing that. And I still find it magical. There are things that I find magical in life that I've found magical since I was five. And the sea is one of them, you know. The radio is the other. I still look in the corner and go, how does that work? How can I listen to something from the other side of the world as it's... I still don't, you know, it still bedevils me, even though it's been there for all my life. But that's very much the thing, Tams. You know, I think it just helps place you and what's going on in a slightly easier way, and I think we all could do with a bit of that. Mm. You know, and I, like I say, walking is very important to me. I've got a few books on the boil, and you know, a couple that I'm actually physically working on, but a couple that I want to write, and one of them is a walking book.
Oh, and fun.
Yeah, I hope to. Yeah, fingers crossed.
So what was your childhood like? Were your parents cooks, gardeners? You know, are you inspired from that?
Not even slightly. No. My parents split when I was 10. And although they were both in the same town, I lived with my dad. And he was that kind of dad who had a sort of very short rotor of quick to make things that would fill you up, you know, as you know, we were in our council house in the middle of in the estate, and we didn't have a lot of money, and it was just like, okay, there's roast something, and then tomorrow will be whatever the roast something was left over with something else. And it was very simple food. The thing I got from him, I guess, is he was born in Sri Lanka, so there was a lot of spicy things going on, you know, so I got a good love of that from him for sure. But yeah, no, there was no, I mean, honestly, it was all really late. I've always been a greedy guts and interested in what I'm eating. And, you know, while I'm eating breakfast, I'm thinking, what's for lunch? You know, that's very much my mentality and still is. But I would say the love of gardening really came from when I met my wife, you know, it really did. And, but it was that odd thing of going, something that was always there. I remember watching Gardener's World when I was, I don't know, 12, and thinking, if I am ever interested in watching this, shoot me. You know, this is the dullest thing I've ever seen. Yeah, I know. But since having that thought and realizing that I was finally into it, I've been concerned that actually what happens is anything I deeply dislike, I'm paying enough attention to then see the magic in it. And that worries me, you know, that really worries me that one day I'll get to like Formula One or something awful like that, you know. So, yeah, it was all very much later. And a lot of it, like I say, you know, I owe it to my wife for showing me the light, you know, and the joy of it.
Brilliant. That is so funny. If I ever watch this, I love it. I should say that to my husband. He says that when he's watching, he doesn't like watching Gardener's World. He's not into gardening at all. He's nearly 60. I think we might be pushing it for him.
Never too late. As a friend of mine said, trouble is, Mark, in the end, everyone loves Fleetwood Mac. And I think that's the same with gardening. In the end, it will wear you down by its brilliance, you know, because the pleasure of it is kind of universal. You may not want to fill a massive space with endless flowers, but there is a magic in it because it is so fundamental to us. You know, it's so very much part of us as a species to eat, to grow, to take pleasure, You know, I think it's a matter of scale, you know.
So what is your, right, you've got a busy day ahead. What do you eat? This sounds really awful. You know, what's lunch for Mark? Because I really struggle with lunches. I'm sort of a cheese and onion sandwich girl and I'm bored of it. You know, with the time, you know, you've got limited time. What do you have?
Yeah. I do that thing a lot of people do in our boat, if you're freelancing, is, you know, you work for yourself, you're at home a lot of the time, is I kid myself, if I have a massive breakfast, then I'll just have a small lunch and then I'll just have a massive lunch. So I think, it depends. There's usually some egg on toast lying around during the day because I really like egg on toast, but a lot of it is leftover stuff. You know what I'm trying to do? I'm trying to go kind of down that road for breakfast, but then in the day, in the daytime itself, I'm trying to fill it with healthier stuff. So I'm actually doing things like putting out apples and salad-y stuff, maybe making salad, too much salad the night before, so it's ready on the day. Because you know what it's like, you need something, you feel like you need to get back to it, you might be in the middle of stuff, there might need to be a small window, all of that sort of thing. So I am trying to get better at not reaching for the toast 200-300 times a day.
Yeah.
But I have that thing now where I'm looking for a sweet treat during the day.
Oh, I like licorice. On my desk, I've got bags of licorice. I love it.
Have you?
Yeah.
Right. I have a theory, and you've maybe borne it out a little bit here, that if you're working at home, especially, and at a desk, that you are, everybody has their own special sweet thing. Yours is licorice. You know James Alexander Sinclair?
Yeah, what's he?
He's a Jaffa cake eater. He's a Jaffa cake eater. His wife informs me that he eats a packet a day.
That's terrible.
I know. I know. And now I've shamed him. Shamed him on here. I've got a weakness for a little bit of chocolate. Just a little. I don't need too much, but I've got to have it, if you know what I mean. You know, it's just chipping at me all day if I don't. Yeah, that's about it, really. But I think that's it. I'm trying to get better at eating quick to get salad-y, you know, get all the stuff that I don't get. The good for you stuff is what I'm trying to make easy. But in truth, a lot of the time, it's whatever's left over and, you know, that kind of thing. But I'm trying to be better. You should have a proper lunch. You should have a proper break. Sit down somewhere else.
Yeah, it is quite hard, though, isn't it, when you're working on your own? You think, like, keep going. Now, you are often appearing at shows, events, doing talks and exciting us all on the stage. How have you got on without that this year?
Oh, man. It's like you say, you know, I'm one of the things I really, really love New Year's Day. I couldn't be less interested in New Year's Eve, but New Year's Day I love. I feel like everything's been wiped clean, you know, we can start again. It feels like I feel such an optimistic day and I head for the beach on that day. But I feel like that's the day I look mentally towards the rest of the year, you know, and you know what happens? You're going, okay, it's Malvern Spring, it's Cardiff, it's Chelsea, it's Hampton Court, it's Tatton, and it rumbles through the year and then it's Malvern Autumn later on. And then there's all the food ones and all of that. And I do a lot of it, do a lot of hosting, do a lot of talks, do a lot of demoing, all of that stuff. And it's been like having an arm cut off.
Yeah.
You know, I absolutely love it. It's part of, you know, I mean, obviously income wise, it's been dreadful, but the pleasure of it, you know, of say hosting something like at Malvern where I'll be, you know, chatting with, I don't know, it could be Valentine Warner or Carol Klein or John Turode or Monty or Joe Swift or whatever, you know. And you're talking about stuff, they're cooking or they're making stuff or we're playing with plants or doing a design workshop with Joe. The joy that people get out of that, you know, the pleasure. And I am one of those, you know. I'm listening to all of these people, having a chat with all these people, interviewing them, whatever. And for that half an hour, that hour, there's a kind of magic going on that you can't quite kind of replace. And it is such a joy to be doing that and with so many people. And yeah, it's felt like in lots of ways, it feels like 20 years ago since it last happened, but also that everything's just on hold and waiting to start again. And that's how I think it will be, you know. But I completely love it. And it's been really crap. And that was, I mean, the joy of having the Malvern Plant and Garden Festival a couple of weekends ago was that you saw it again. I think if there's one thing that comes out of this, as far as those shows and festivals go, is that we've been refreshed for how much we get out of them. You know, I mean that whether you're there for your own pleasure or whether you're working there or whatever, the joy of people being able to pick up plants, talk about them, you know, how they work together, what they're going to use, how they're going to cook them is, you know, it's a marvelous thing, you know. And I think that is one silver lining we'll take out of this awful time is that we appreciate the things that do us a lot of good.
And also you having contact with people that might buy your book, because they're inspiring you by their questions they ask. And, you know, your lovely book, Sour, yeah. which I love the cover of, by the way. How funky is that? It's like a green wash, isn't it, of paint. It's just...
Yeah.
It's
really...
It's fab.
Yeah, I was bowled over. Yeah, I was speaking to the designer. He said, what do you think? Is it going to be you on the cover? And I said, you know what? I don't want me on the cover. I don't want a recipe on the cover. I don't want a food shot on the cover. What I'd like is for someone to walk into a shop, A, be able to notice it, and B, it to set the back of the jaw alight with that sourness. And
yeah.
And he really quickly came back with this amazing idea. And we're taking the spirit of that for the next book. You know, we're kind of doing a little flavor series. And the next one is on herbs, and it'll be the kind of, you know, the joy of using and eating them and the transformational nature of them. But we're going to keep that same kind of feel, even though it'll be different about the cover.
But you are inspired, I take it, by talking to people at events, by the questions.
Oh my God, all the time. Yeah. All the time. It's so, you know, people think you've just got this kind of driving thing and you never run out of ideas and all of that. Everyone, certainly that I can think of, so let's say most people have... You know, that we're not islands, you know, so people will come up and say, oh, have you tried this with that? Or, you know, even if it's a question, because it's being framed by somebody else and not in your own head, it's very, very different. Like you were saying, what would I do with a quince? You know, what should I do with these quince? Well, is it four? Is it a skipful? Is it one? And suddenly you're into a whole kind of, all, you know, and do you like this? And no, I don't like that. But also other people set with the same questions. I've got a bit of land. What should I do with it? Or have different answers. And when you're talking to them about that, so it might be that somebody comes to me with a question, what should I grow in a damp bit in the corner where there's not a lot of light? But I get as much out of that question that's being asked to me as they hopefully get from me with the answer, because the answer isn't necessarily mine, because it's a conversation. You know, I don't like this. I've never tried that. I didn't know about Sweet Sicily. How does that work? It's a self-seeder. It's gorgeous, comes up early. And you end up in that conversation and you think about things differently because you're not the only person in it. And it is, I just love meeting people who have the same enthusiasm, but with different, their own angle on it, you know. So it never, ever gets to be anything but really exciting and interesting and inspiring, like you say.
Well, let's hope next year is a slightly different year. But I think one thing's for sure, people will be interested in the food they can grow. I think that will carry on.
Mm.
So what's your dream for the future? And then I'm going to let you get on with your creative work today.
Do you know what? I was thinking about this a little while ago when we left the farm. You know, what's your dream job, Diacono? And my dream job was, it occurred to me, was to be Bill Bryson, which is to write about what you're doing. And whether that's gardening or food or walking or whatever it is, that's what I want to do. I want to have a garden that gives me a lot of joy and a lot of pleasure at a scale that works for my life. I want to keep pulling food out of the soil and looking after that soil in exchange, and to write about everything else. And to meet and see and speak and cook with and talk with and play with and chat with and be inspired by people who like doing similar things.
Sounds good to me.
It's all right, isn't it?
Yeah, not bad. Well, thank you so much, Mark, for joining me on Fresh from the Pod, and carry on with your writing, because I'm sure you're inspiring a lot of people. And I think I might have to push your books under my son's nose so we don't have any more strange concoctions.
Well, it's been a total joy and a pleasure to be part of this amazing podcast series that you're doing. So thanks, Tams, and very nice to see you as well.
Thanks, Mark. Well, that was great fun, and I'm really inspired by Mark's story of actually finding his passion later in life. So it means we can all switch our work roles up a gear and change whatever age you are. It's never too late. So I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I did. See you next time, and in the meantime, happy gardening.
Fresh from the Pod is presented by me, Tamsin Westhorpe, and produced by Candide in their plant-filled Bristol office. Candide is a free plant and gardening app with a helpful community of plant lovers, interesting articles and great tools like plant identification and garden tours. Ask a question in the app with the hashtag #FreshFromThePod and I'll choose my favourite to answer later in the series. And if you enjoyed Fresh From The Pod, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts, share it on Reddit and talk about it with your friends. And don't forget to subscribe.